Welcome back, everyone. We're Simply Bitcoin. We break down the news from Twitter, the daily fail, meme review, software releases, hardware releases, and the websites by plebs. Joining us today is the CEO of Luxor Mining Pool, Nick. All right, we're going to the numbers. Let's do it.
Number time!
Number Time is brought to you by Bitcoin 2022. It's going to be the largest Bitcoin conference ever in sunny Miami. And you can take advantage of the link down below for 10% off your tickets to Bitcoin 2022.
At the time of this recording, the block height is 710,049. The Bitcoin price, 60,630. Chain rewrite days, 749. Total public Lightning capacity, that's a new all-time high, 3,225.39. Moscow time, 16:49, and blocks to the halving, 129,951.
Bitcoin's dead, Phil.
It's over. I know, it died again.
It died again.
It was terrible. I'm so pissed because I could have picked some up at 58K when it died. I was looking at it last night and I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm like Dennis and the 58K gang. Right away when I saw the candles, I'm like, freaking Dennis,
dude!
That's the only person I have to blame.
I think he's I think he's cursing us, bro. You know, he's really stuck with that 58K number. But Phil, we got someone in the comments, and check this out. This is what he had to say. It was from John Thor Austin. It says, when you do the numbers once in a while, you should explain one of the stats randomly. Okay. Well, John, I got some hopium for you. Don't get too excited. We don't like to speculate on the price, but I'm about to inject some hopium into your veins, John. Check this out. This is a tweet from Charles Edwards, right? He says, Bitcoin supply delta looks very bullish. The vast majority of similar readings to today were followed by large price appreciation. That doesn't mean it's going to happen again, okay, guys? And like I said, this is just hopium. The most similar reading to today in terms of value profile and price action is the 2013 double bubble, right? And if you look at it, here is the supply delta that he's talking about, right? And as you can see, right, you know, it kind of sets it up for a possible blow off top. There's your random stat of the day, John. I hope you found it useful. But anyways, Phil, any thoughts on the hopium?
that just made me bullish. You know, I hate that. I hate seeing that stuff. It's the worst. I was talking before with Pirate. You know, about the candles and the charts.
Oh, Pirate's freaking out, bro.
Oh yeah, no, it's. But it's brutal. It's brutal because, you know, you go, you look at them, you look at the monthly, and it's like, yeah, you know, it looks great. Everything's intact. And it's like, well, why is it slumping? It's like, I don't know. I don't know why it's slumping. You know, I can't give reasons. Things look good, you know?
Nick's plugged into the Bitcoin matrix, right?
Because
he runs a mining pool. Nick, are you seeing some bullish things?
I mean, everything in the world is bullish, you know, inflation, all of these things. I mean, I don't speculate much on price, but I just can't see how you would sell Bitcoin right now. There's no way you could pry it from my hands. So I'm with you guys.
Boom.
Plus one.
Plus one. Okay, so we're all on the same page. We're clearly all injected hopium into our veins. Let's see what happens. But anyways, Phil, it's time for
the Daily Fail. Brought to you by Amber App. Check them out, amber.app. It's Bitcoin made easy. Easiest way to invest in Bitcoin. Check them out down below. I can't believe that I just completely forgot about Yellow, but there he is.
Amber, the smart way to stack sats.
Craig is a potato.
This isn't the, you know, the full fail, but I find that doing these like quick takes at the beginning is kind of interesting. So we're gonna dive into some the ultrasound money, right? This is ultrasound, right? Anyway, so here we go. This is a tweet from CryptUI2. At OpenSea, how can gas fee be so high for a bundle? NFTs are not moving because of that. Yeah, I'm pretty sure maybe they're not moving because people are figuring out that they're getting ripped off for JPEGs. But anyways, maybe the jig is up, who knows? So let's take a look at this fee over here, right? Let's take a look. Scott, this is what he actually has in his account, but look at the estimated gas fee, okay? For trying to transfer that much. I don't even know if that makes sense. I don't even know if that makes sense, but essentially it's costing him over a half an ETH to do a transaction of 0.6 of an ETH.
What's absolutely hilarious about this is that it was Vitalik a couple years ago that said it. I'll put in the video.
Oh, you
have it?
Yeah.
Okay, let's do it.
You know, right now a Bitcoin transaction costs 5 cents, which is fine right now because PayPal's fees are even stupider. But kind of, you know, the internet of money should not cost 5 cents a transaction. It's kind of absurd.
This is what the gas fee is, $51. Really? I don't understand how that is, like, to make these transfers. Like, are you kidding me? I just don't get it. Let's go take a look at the average price of a Bitcoin transaction right now, just for the sake of it. It's about $2.86 per transaction. So
if you want to do it quickly, though.
Yeah. If you want to do it quickly, I mean, you could just, you know, set it to what, like zero, and then just wait, and then like by the end of the month it'll get cleared out or something like that. But anyways, look, the point is that ETH stuff is such crap. We all knew it. Now people are starting to see it more and more. We saw it way back in 2017. It happened with CryptoKitties, where CryptoKitties just killed it. Okay, and now it's come back to die again. But now it's come back to die with a lot more people's money in it. Mm-hmm. Think about that. Anyways, all right, let's move on. I don't usually pick one of my own tweets, but this was actually a pretty funny article that I read about the cubes. Mark Cuban, not the tungsten cubes. That's just what I call Mark Cuban. The cubes. Anyways, so Mark Cuban says he's locking 50K in tokenized carbon offsets every 10 days.
What does that even mean?
Oh, just wait, Nico. If you thought that was bullshit, wait till I read you this article. The billionaire investor believes DeFi degeneracy can be harnessed for the purpose of environmental social governance. This is deep. This is going to be deep, guys. Get ready. You're going to do some thoughtful analysis here. Here we go. Famed billionaire and reality TV star Mark Cuban has revealed he is using blockchain technology to lock up carbon offsets on the Polygon network. Everybody remembers the Polygon network, right? We all remember the Polygon network. Hackers steal $600 million. Of course, they did get it back, but still.
Is that the same one? Is that the same one?
Oh, yeah, it's the same net. But wait. There's a little twist to it, right? And then, of course, they're number one on the wrecked leaderboard. Unaudited, so, you know. Sure, that would have made a difference. Anyways, we're going back. The billionaire blockchain enthusiast stated that he has been buying $50,000 worth of carbon offsets and placing them on-chain as base carbon tons, or BCT, roughly every 10 days since the launch of, and this is the part here that everyone should pay attention to, Kilmadeo. It's all just a scam. BCTs are digital assets bridged onto the Polygon network by Toucan Protocol that represent 1 ton of carbon from the verified carbon unit registry. Kilmadeo, a decentralized blockchain project that aims to drive appreciation of the price of BCT, pump your bags, and has accumulated over 9 million BCTs, told Cointelegraph that it uses Polygon because it is a proof-of-stake network with negligible emissions that generates low carbon footprint. That's right, I just read that to you. I just read all of that garbage to you. Before I continue, do you have anything on this?
Dude, I think that Cuban... you know, Max Kaiser, when he came on the show, touched upon this, and he calls them egomaniacs. And I think the fact that he didn't get into Bitcoin first drives him up the frickin' wall. This is all speculation, of course. And he just has this resentment that he wants to be the first to the next Bitcoin, but there isn't a next Bitcoin. And again, back to, you know, the shitcoin argument of, you know, Bitcoin uses too much energy. We've discussed that time and time again on the show. Bitcoin uses stranded energy. It uses energy that was already going to waste, most of it at least, right? So again, you know, it's a false narrative. It's been debunked so many times. Nick Carter wrote an excellent paper, which Phil read on the show. So yeah, man, it's just more garbage from the cubes, you know? And let me remind you guys, this guy told you that he said he'd rather own bananas than own Bitcoin.
Yeah. And yet here he is shilling complete centralized crap, and it's proof of stake. So we all know exactly how that works and how it's centralized. And, you know, anyways, let's continue on with this. Okay. Check this out. Cuban support of Klimadeo comes as no surprise. Klima is in his portfolio of investments. He could not be reached for comment on the extent of his involvement with Klima. It's very interesting, though, right? So obviously he's just shilling his bags. Like, that's why he's putting out this article. That's why this is all happening. This is all just promotion of garbage. Anyways, DClimate announced in June of this year that Cuban had joined the network as an investor and strategic advisor. DClimate is the first network for decentralized climate data.
What does that even mean?
What the? Like, what?
Oh, man.
I mean, people are just coming up with this stuff, and they I don't, anyways, somebody else is validating this.
Wait, read his quote.
Yeah.
Read his quote.
Yeah, it's great. This is where we're ending it. Cuban said, "I'm excited to be working with a team that is using blockchain and smart contracts to solve a pressing real-world problem, and that is building a platform to help organizations around the world build climate resilience." That is some of the most pathetic, nonsensical crap I've ever read. I mean, it just... How is a shitcoin going to fix anything with climate change? That has nothing to do with it. This doesn't help anything. Like, it's all... And that... Did you see how they inserted, like, the reason why he chose this shitcoin? Because it has, like, negligible emissions? No, because it has no work that goes into it. There is no proof of work. There's nothing. It's made out of thin air, and it's controlled by a small group of people, if not just one single person. Anyways.
No, you're spot on, Phil. You know, without proof of work, right, you know, the proof of stake system that, you know, the Ruth Bader, I don't know, the machine that was supposed to, like, you know, not use power, forget the name, but... The point is that the proof of stake, at the end of the day, you know, it's I would say it's the same as the fiat system that we have today, right? The more fiat you have, the more that you can manipulate the network to your advantage, right? So proof of stake is kind of the same thing, right? What makes Bitcoin so special is proof of work. That's what makes it uncorruptible. And going back to this climate narrative, I would even say that Bitcoin mining, in a way, does help the climate in a way, because it makes energy producers more efficient. The example that I would give is right now, all the gas producers, or the people that mine natural gas, they flare that into the atmosphere before Bitcoin. After Bitcoin, that flared gas could now potentially be turned into Bitcoin. It now has value, right? Before, it was just being vented into the atmosphere, polluting the world. Now, all natural gas around the world has value now. So venting it into atmosphere is actually costing you more than turning it into Bitcoin, right? So again, I think the cubes is butthurt. Like Max Kaiser said, I think that he has a massive ego, and he just can't accept the fact that he wasn't first to Bitcoin. And I think that there's a lot of other people like that. I think Nassim Taleb definitely falls into that category. I think Nouriel Roubini as well. I think there's just so many of them, so many of these individuals. And at the end of the day, listen, Bitcoin humbles all. Peter Schiff has been, you know, talking crap about Bitcoin for 10 years. If he just, you know, humbled himself before the king, he would have made a ridiculous return. Instead, you know, he's stuck to the shiny metal, bro, and he's cost his Twitter followers and himself potentially millions of dollars, to the point that even his own son is ripping him a new one on Twitter. Anyways, Nick, what do you think of this madness? What do you think of the cubes telling people that he'd rather own bananas than Bitcoin?
Well, I can touch on the energy consumption, right? So one thing that, first of all, I don't like the narrative that Bitcoin doesn't use a lot of energy relative to other things. Like, you'll hear a lot of folks say, well, Bitcoin mining doesn't even use as much energy as Christmas lights or whatever. The problem with that is that it necessarily needs to use more energy to continue to maintain its security, which I think is a good thing. But let's go back to actually how much it does use. So we can take a look at the total network hash rate and make an estimate, or we can actually put upper and lower bounds on the total amount of energy used. So if we assume that the entire network is S9s, which is the least efficient miner that's economically viable today, the entire network is going to be somewhere around 14 gigawatts. If we assume S19J Pros, the most efficient miner that exists today until the XP comes out later this year, we can assume that the network uses around 4.5 gigawatts. So we know that somewhere between there is the actual consumption of the network, Bitcoin networks, 4.5 to 14 gigawatts. I would guess somewhere just under 10 if I had to assume, if I had to make a quick guess. The entirety of ERCOT, the entirety of Texas generates like something close to 100 gigawatts. So just Texas produces almost 10 times the amount of energy that is Bitcoin actually uses currently. And that's just in a very small segment of one country of the entire world. So the idea that Bitcoin is using a lot of energy is really nonsense. I mean, it certainly does. If you've ever been to a mining facility, it seems like this thing uses a ton of energy. It's just anecdotally, though. Like if you go to, I'm sure if you go to a steel mill, you'll feel a lot of heat. You'll feel a lot of energy, you know, being put off there as well. But you know, at the end of the day, Bitcoin mining, then you know, steel. The product there is not the energy; it's actually the steel. Where in Bitcoin mining is just an energy problem now. I think Chad Harris at Riot, he said it best on a Twitter Spaces I was on recently that. It's whoever can get electrons into a Bitcoin block the most efficiently. That's gonna be the person that wins the Bitcoin mining game. And so that's really all we're trying to do here is get electrons into a block. So, that's how I feel about ESG and the the green narrative around Bitcoin. I do believe that green energy ultimately is the most sustainable and long-term source. There will be a lot of steps along the way, which, you know, mining and using coal, that was a step that got us to where we are today. Now we use natural gas more efficiently, and we're going to probably trend towards using solar, wind, and some other more sustainable, like long-term sustainable. When I say sustainable, I don't mean sustainable has kind of been stolen by mainstream, meaning like good for the world and green. What I mean by sustainable is like it'll last longer than humanity will last. Like solar energy and wind energy are injected into the planet. So that's sustainable, meaning it'll be there forever. Where fossil fuels, there is a limited amount of fossil fuel. Like if you burned it all, it would eventually go away.
So Nick, I'm a huge fan of nuclear energy, right? Because yeah. I think that it will bridge, you know, the gap between until, because the issue with solar, right, is
right.
Again, sometimes there's no sun and it's actually right. Very difficult to store energy. Right. You right. have to consume it as soon as you produce it. Right.
Right.
So I think that nuclear energy, I think, is a very viable option till then. But if you talk to the green people, they would say that's the devil. So what are your thoughts on nuclear from a miner's perspective?
Compass, they partnered up with a nuclear plant that should come online sometime in the next decade.
We had Wit on the show to talk about that.
Exactly. And I think Nuke is awesome. I think that's the final frontier of humans evolution into a tier one society. I think we start to use nuclear energy. I think we will necessarily need to start using nuclear energy to power everything here, or inevitably the plant. The planet
let's touch back on that when you yep. said tier one society, because I know what you're talking about. Yep. You're talking about a tier one civilization, yes. Right? I forget the name of the Russian guy that came up with it. Could you tell the audience what that means?
Yeah, so it's a guy named Kardashev. I just pulled it up here because I couldn't remember his name either. Basically, it's a type one civilization is a planetary civilization that can use and store all of the energy available on its planet. And then you start getting into like higher order civilizations, tier two, meaning it's a stellar civilization, meaning you can move between planets. And that's kind of where Elon Musk wants us to go. And then there is type three, which is called a galactic civilization, where you're actually moving between galaxies. That's far and away past my mental capacity, but I think type one is certainly something to strive for.
Absolutely.
And, I mean, go ahead. And then I think another really interesting, one of the reasons this is interesting to me is that the human condition is improved as energy is consumed. Mm-hmm. The more energy that we consume and produce and then subsequently consume, the better humans have fared. And I think that we need to continue that trend. We need to use more energy, get more energy from all of the sources that are available to us. I think people trying to get you to curtail your energy usage are effectively asking you to live a life that is of lower quality than our predecessors.
Absolutely. It's totally evil, and I totally agree with that statement. And, the way that I see it, Nick, is Bitcoin wins when we build a Dyson sphere around the sun and use that to power all the miners. That's what happens.
That'd be amazing.
But anyways, Phil, it's time for the Daily Meme Review. Brought to you by Citadel 21. It's the best Bitcoin cultural zine. It's pure pleb signal. Get yourself a physical copy. These are the new editions, Volume 8, Volume 9. There's only 1,000 made per volume. They're scarce. So get your copy of Citadel 21 today. All right, everybody. The meme for today. First one is brought to us by Caro. We were supposed to review this one yesterday when Taproot activated. I think it's from Lord of the Rings, but it's an Ent. It's an Ent with the Bitcoin heart. And moving on to the next one. This was requested by Hugo. Definitely subscribe to his YouTube channel, by the way. It's called the FU Money Podcast. It's on YouTube. Anyways, check it out. Will I ever launch ETH 2.0? No. Fuck. You'll never do that either. Moving on. That's a good one, Hugo. Okay, moving on. This one's by the Bitcoin Insurgent. You don't listen, do you? You just ask the same question every week. How's your job? Are you having any Bitcoin thoughts? All I have are Bitcoin thoughts. That is the story of my life, actually. All right, moving on to the next one. And this is by the Fat Bitcoin 2, me buying the dip, the second dip. And just to end the meme review, the last meme, by Dennis. I hate you, Dennis. Not 58K again. First time, 58K. Awesome, awesome, awesome memes. And because they're awesome memes, Phil, I'm going to give it a very special score. It is the Lady Liberty of Bitcoin by CryptoCooks. I don't think he sells these anymore. But anyways, really, really cool stuff. Awesome memes, especially the one by Hugo. What would you give those memes, Phil?
Oh my gosh, love those memes. Absolutely fantastic. And I'm a huge fan of Lord of the Rings, so the Ent with the Bitcoin heart definitely gets me. Anyways, for all those memes, I'm giving it something a little early, but still awesome and still almost at the right time. It's a USB Christmas tree.
Oh.
Right? You just plug it in and it lights up.
Does it actually have data though? Or no?
No, it has no data. It's like they have some cooler ones, right? Where, you could probably program the lights. But this one's just a simple light up,
Okay.
Lights up.
Lame. No data. Okay, anyways, sorry. Nick, what would you give those memes? What would your score be?
Give it one whole Bitcoin. I've got a Bitcoin here. It's a physical one.
Ooh.
If I showed you the back.
Is that a Cassatius coin?
It is not.
I was about to say, you have those?
I'll show you the back. It has no Bitcoin.
Oh my god, dude.
No Bitcoin on it. But
dude.
How cool would that have been?
I would have freaked out. Like, dude, and they're going more for what they're actually worth.
Yeah.
Like, for the amount of Bitcoin that they have on them. But
yeah. That's Bitcoin is still interesting, though, even if it doesn't, just those kind of, those things are cool. Like, I have one of those. It has no Bitcoin on it, but
yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's just, I don't know.
I've heard of people, keeping them around, but yeah, I can't do it. It's too scary. Could you imagine actually holding a Bitcoin on a physically printed coin?
Even the open dimes freak me the fuck out.
Yeah.
Even the open dimes, I'm like, I give them away because I haven't put Bitcoin on an open dime, but I give them away like candy because it's such a good gift. I gave one to you, Phil, when I came to visit you.
But anyways, it's time for...
I still have it.
You still have it? Oh, yeah. It's time for the daily news. Brought to you by CryptoCloaks.com. Get yourself the best 3D printed Bitcoin merch, like the 3D printed Honey Badger. Look, has a case. You can put your cold card in there. Or the Bitcoin Freedom Grenade. Look, it's in El Salvador colors. It's a piece of art. It's not an actual grenade. Anyways, get yourself some Crypto Cloak stuff and take advantage of the link down below for 5% off. All right, everybody. So more of kind of a catch up to the whole infrastructure bill fiasco. For anyone who's in the know, we covered this tremendously when this happened. But look, to quote Senator Loomis herself.
The fact that Treasury got a jump on us in trying to define broker in this bill.
The Treasury, specifically Yellen, right, put some, I would say, non-friendly crypto tax reporting regulation into the Biden infrastructure bill at last second. They tried to amendment, but they weren't successful at it. But it looks like senators are trying to fix it anyways. Let's read from the article on Bloomberg. A bipartisan team of U.S. senators is introducing a bill to narrow some cryptocurrency tax reporting rules that were laid out in the infrastructure legislation that's set to become law on Monday. The new bill, the text of which was obtained by Bloomberg News, seeks to override a provision in the infrastructure legislation that cryptocurrency investors say is overly broad and will stifle growth of digital currencies. Senator Finance Committee Chairman Ron Wyden, an Oregon Democrat, and Senator Cynthia Loomis, a Wyoming Republican, wrote the tweak to the rules. It's very important that it's bipartisan, by the way. Moving on. Our bill, to quote, I guess one of the senators said this. It says Wyden. Okay. Our bill makes clear that the new reporting requirements do not apply to individuals developing blockchain technology and wallets. Wyden said in a statement, this will protect American innovation while at the same time ensuring those who buy and sell cryptocurrency pay the taxes they already owe. Now, here's the thing, because I'm a little scared because, again, how the current infrastructure bill is phrased, right? A miner or someone who's running a node could technically be considered a broker in its current language, right? It's up to the government's discretion, and you know how that's going to end up, right? To decide whether that falls into play. That really, you know, in just on that quote alone, he didn't really address that. But, right, Senator Ted Cruz of Texas actually went even more hardcore than Cynthia Loomis. Then Senator Wyden, I think his name was. But anyways, this was a press release by Senator Ted Cruz's office. It says Senator Cruz introduces legislation to repeal infrastructure bill's devastating attack on emerging cryptocurrency industry. Now, why is Ted Cruz so on top of this? Because there's a huge mining industry in Texas, baby. So he's just watching out for his own interests. Anyways, this is what he says. The provision will stifle innovation and endanger the privacy of many Americans and cryptocurrencies and likely push key aspects of the industry overseas to countries like China. China gave us a gift by banning Bitcoin mining. And Bitcoin mining migrated more so to Texas. I know to Kazakhstan. I know to Canada. But the U.S. got the majority. Correct me if I'm wrong, Nick. But anyways...
Oh, yeah. This is a great time for me to step in here. So I think a couple things. So yeah, Texas loves Bitcoin. Texas is going to be a bastion for Bitcoin for a long time to come. And the reason for that is because, exactly like you said, you remember what I mentioned, I think the total network is probably somewhere between 8 and 10 total gigawatts right now. When I was in Dubai, it was a week ago now, when I was having conversations with large infrastructure providers, I was able to identify close to 5 gigawatts of new hash rate, of new mining power coming online just in Texas. So I think there's going to be, separate the centralization concerns from the reality that is the world. Texas is going to be a major player in the Bitcoin mining market for a long time to come. And Texas politicians are already identifying this. The Texas Blockchain Council just met with Governor Abbott a couple weeks ago. There's a lot of work being done there. And I think this is really good. You know, if you know American history, you know that Texas really is kind of can operate like its own country. So if the federal government tries to do something against Bitcoin, Texas can really be a way for us to, fight back, I guess, against overarching federal government regulations.
Absolutely. And that's kind of the language that you get from, you know, Ted Cruz. You had Cynthia Lummis and, you know, and it was a bipartisan effort to try to, you know, fix it. Ted Cruz wants it completely struck out of the bill altogether. And that makes perfect sense to what Nick was saying. But the important part, and Phil and I have talked about this many, many times, right, which is the actual government structure of the United States and how each individual state has so much sovereignty over the federal government. And we've actually gone out on a limb many times, Nick, and we've said on the show that we see Bitcoin becoming legal tender on a state level before it becomes legal tender on a federal level. And if you look at the marijuana industry, they did the same thing, right? Marijuana became legal on a state level before it ever, I don't know if it's planning to, but it's not legal on a federal level, right? So if the incentives are there for Texas, it's exactly what you said. Texas is going to fight tooth and nail to try to keep that business, right? This is the incentives of Bitcoin. It's beautiful. It goes into the better flag theory, you know, and that's how powerful Bitcoin is, right? And you kind of saw that, right? When China did the mining ban, right? It was ridiculous. And Nick, I'm, you know, from the mining perspective, yep. I'm sure you were starstruck as well. The rate at which the hash rate recovered was absolutely incredible, because once you understand how much physical hardware that is, that has to be moved, has to be relocated, has to be plugged in, right? It's absolutely insane, but it makes perfect sense because of the incentives of Bitcoin. When the hash rate started to drop, it was the largest difficulty adjustment in history. It was 27.9%, right? Yep. That's a very, very big incentive to plug in those old miners, right? And start earning some Bitcoin.
So I went through and actually did the math on how many machines potentially came offline. At an absolute minimum, 650,000 machines came offline. I mean, these machines, while they're not the biggest thing in the world, they're about this size. I mean, this thing is, you know, now imagine a million of those having to move somewhere around the world, and they end up becoming, they end up becoming massively valuable because they're now, they're massively valuable because they are being banned, and like this is causing crazy market forces that we've never seen before. To the China ban, we had heard of, I've been in crypto for 6-7 years now, and we've heard of China banning things, from exchanges to mining to production of machines to, protocols, all sorts of stuff for basically every year. But this is the first time around, April, we started getting phone calls from our Chinese counterparts, like, this is actually happening. We need to start moving our machines now. And so the earliest movers were coming in April and early May. And then by the end of May, it was shut off. It was completely just like a flip of a switch. And then a little bit later this year, they actually banned the exchange. I don't think they banned the actual ownership, but I know they banned the exchange of crypto to Chinese customers. And then that effectively kills, that effectively kills it, except for, crazy cypherpunks like us.
So two things. So I saw it, because I'm a hoster, right? So I saw it from that perspective. I got completely full. I ran out of space, right? Like, everyone was trying to find a place to park their miners, right? And then the second thing I wanted to touch on was I actually contacted a friend of mine who lives in mainland China. He's Chinese, right? And I asked him, I'm like, hey, are you worried about this ban? And he's like, man, this has happened so many times. This just makes the honey badger stronger. And the fact those words were said by someone on the other side of the planet with a different culture, and the fact that we were speaking the same language, I think really highlights the power of Bitcoin. But anyways,
we actually know of specific people, but we know there are people that have unplugged their miners and have replugged them back in China illegally. So as you mentioned, the honey badger continues to not give a fuck and is basically going to continue to mine this thing while it's super profitable. So we've actually heard of, like, there was actually a guy that just got put in jail, and what he was doing was assisting provinces or people within his province to continue mining outside the purview of the federal government. So what we've heard is they basically give them a, you know, they give them a little tip, like, hey, move your machines, and they pack them up and off they go. And then they come back once the federal government has left. So, you know, as you, it's a great way of putting it, the honey badger don't give a shit, and they're going to keep mining while they can and while it's profitable.
It's so funny because you see this type of behavior in different countries, because you know, so I started mining originally in Venezuela, and you know, I had to leave because of the security there, and the security issues was the actual government people started to figure out that these machines, and of course it's a socialist country, so the energy is subsidized, meaning, and there's a difference between the official currency exchange rate and the black market rate, so you're essentially paying, like, the electricity was practically free. But it was funny because the customs officials were starting to catch on, and they would just seize the machines so that they could start mining it themselves,
right?
But it's funny because the incentive is there, and people find a way anyways, right? Whether that's in China, whether that's in Venezuela, whether that's in Iran, right? Bitcoin finds a way, right? So, but anyways, kind of pivoting a little bit. Phil, any thoughts on this?
You know what? I can't add anything to the mining, but I just wanted to add something about the government legislation. It kind of reminds me of the bed of Procrustes, right? Like, they're essentially trying to fit what we've mentioned many times before, this antiquated system on top of Bitcoin, which doesn't fit, right? So they can't cut off Bitcoin's legs and they can't stretch it. So I think that policymakers are going to find themselves having to essentially reinvent the wheel, because this is not the same system as the financial legacy system.
Absolutely. It, you know, if you could regulate Bitcoin, it would defeat the whole purpose of Bitcoin. But anyways, exactly. Ted Cruz for president 2024. Yeah. But anyways, moving on. Everyone's not so happy, though. Steve Hanke is having another panic attack. Check this out. This guy, like, is on top of Bitcoin. I feel like he just, like, he's on top. He stays on top of it. Anyways, it says this week El Salvador will host the Latin American Bitcoin Conference, or Bitcoin Week, with ELSL, massive Bitcoin rollout problems, El Salvador, I think that's what he meant, and the public's rejection of Bitcoin. That's not true. That's such a... Anyways, it will be an event worth watching. Okay, I want you guys to remember this part, okay? With El Salvador's massive Bitcoin rollout problems and the public's rejection of Bitcoin. Okay, let's move on to this tweet by Pomp. There is one country on Earth where there are more people using Bitcoin wallets than bank accounts. All right, so let me read Steve Hanke's tweet again. With El Salvador's massive Bitcoin rollout problems and the public's rejection of Bitcoin, it will be an event worth watching. The lies will be thicker than flies. Who's doing the lying? The fiat system, where they're telling you there is no inflation, then the inflation is transitory, and then inflation is a good thing? Or Bitcoin, an open public ledger that everyone could see at all times, the issuance of, nothing's obscure. Who's doing the lying, Steve Hanke? Man, this guy has the nerve. And anyways,
he's insane. He's completely insane.
He speaks in riddles, I guess. Anyways, I also wanted to read this tweet by our buddy Nick Can't Mine. And that's because Nayib Bukele retweeted this tweet, and he says, El Salvador's money, and it was a very powerful tweet as well, El Salvador's money just got upgraded because they have the best developers in the world working for them. They didn't even have to hire them. This is what happens when you plug your country into Bitcoin. Other countries pay attention. Now, connect this with what we were talking about, the mining, right? And essentially how, without any central authority, right, without any CEO, Bitcoin miners migrated away from China to other locations because of the incentives of Bitcoin, and doing so increased the security of the network all on their own, all by just following their incentives by themselves. And El Salvador, right, think about it.
how long does it take you to open a bank account? How long does it take you to download a Bitcoin wallet? There's 1.8 million bank accounts in El Salvador, and it only took 30 days, and now there's 3.3 million El Salvadorians with the Chivo wallet downloaded. And if you look at the top apps of the El Salvador, you know, app stores, whether it's Android or Apple, it's all Bitcoin apps. So Steve Hanke, what's up with the lies, man? It doesn't work. I think he grew up in an era where it's like you could say that and it's like you can't lie on the internet. People can just verify it in 2 seconds. So it's just absolutely hilarious. Phil, what are your thoughts on the Panky?
His insanity scares me. Like, genuinely, he scares me. And you know, I always joke around, right? Like, these people tumble out of the garbage and they come out and this is what they do. And literally, I mean, this guy's takes are completely insane. And like you said, they can easily be verified. I just, you know what? Going back to Nick's tweet, I mean, this is their fear, man. This is absolutely the fear. Like, look, the incentives alone drive the network action. You kidding me? You don't need any of this legislation. You don't need any of these fools. You don't need all of these people. I mean, I'm sorry. Like, look, the reality is that we were all supposed to be doing better things with our time. Okay, for real. I mean, like, and we're not. So Bitcoin is going to allow us to change the way that we live going forward. I really believe so, by having that as the base monetary, you know, as having that as the monetary base. And you know what? Right now, you've got a whole bunch of people that sit there, and as you said in the past, right? Like, they end up working these terrible jobs. They hate their lives. And in some cases, it's like you don't have a choice because these things are created by virtue of the fiat system. Look at all these policymakers. All of these people, and all they're doing is printing money. What are these people doing? Anyways, so yeah. Steve Hanke, fail. All the people, man, around him, fail.
The fiat system is based on lies, and the Bitcoin system is anchored to the truth by proof of work, man. That's just the reality of it. But anyways, Nick, your thoughts on our favorite fiat economist, who apparently has a PhD? Apparently...
PhD. No thoughts on Hanke, honestly. I mean, these are things that people say, and I honestly think the more he's trying to play the shift card here. Understands exactly how the playbook works. He knows he can get a bunch of people to listen to him, and then maybe boomers buy into the idea that this is this is real, because he says he's a PhD and he's old and looks like them. I just don't think that there's really anything that. That he says that's truly valid. Same way with Peter Schiff. I think they're all cut from the same cloth.
I completely agree. Yeah. It's like they're dinosaurs and they don't see a giant orange meteor coming from the sky. But anyways,
and that's not to disparage all boomers. I guess I use that disparagingly because my mom is probably older than Hanke and Schiff, and she buys Bitcoin every single Monday. She bought a miner. I mean, it's not to say that everybody, you know, you can move along with the times. It doesn't mean, it's just a way of thinking.
No, absolutely.
They're not all like that, but unfortunately, he's part of the ones that are doing some, that are selling a shitty narrative, you know?
Yeah, certainly. 100%.
Yeah. Look, my mom's, you know, like around that age, and she still doesn't know how to send a Bitcoin transaction. But she's been accumulating Bitcoin since 2016, and she is full orange-pilled. She's like, pump the price. Nico, what's going on with the price? You know, like every day she has a Spanish accent.
This is tell your parents to buy Bitcoin. Get them to buy some Bitcoin. My mom still thinks she's buying shares of the Bitcoin company, but whatever.
Yeah.
She doesn't know. She loves the NGU technology. She loves that. She's all about it. She's like, fiat is a scam. Yeah, NGU. Banks suck. So she gets
the same comment about the shares.
So she gets it. Yep. But anyways, to end the news segment, I want to talk about mining pools, specifically Nick's mining pool, Luxor mining software stack you could trust. Discover how our mining pool maximizes your Bitcoin and shitcoin rewards. Nick, first of all, we're a Bitcoin show. We have to be. We don't censor ourselves. But anyways, first of all, can you explain to the audience what is a mining pool and why you would want to use one?
Sure. So mining is mathematically equivalent to a lottery. So you guess a number. If you get it right, you win. In the case of Bitcoin, as the difficulty goes up, you have to guess more numbers. So if you're a single person and you're able to guess, you know, one number per second, you just guess that number over and over again, or guess a different number over and over again, just selecting numbers. And if you win, you win the reward. You put all of your, but if you know, as more and more people start to play the game, the difficulty goes up and it's harder for you to guess. So what you do is you jump in with a bunch of people and you all start guessing. But if you're a thinker, you'll think, well, what if I'm guessing the same number? Well, a mining pool just makes sure that we break up the number space so that you're guessing different numbers. So I tell Nico to guess 1 through 1,000. I'll guess 1,000 to 2,000, and then you guess 2,000 to 3,000, and then that's exactly how it works. And then you reach the end, and you reach the end of your space. You know, you say I've reached 1,000. I didn't win. I give you a new set of numbers to work on. And then when somebody guesses it correctly, we make sure that you get the you get the reward. So if you guessed 50 times, I guessed 20, and you guessed 30, we break it up proportionally based on how many tickets we submitted to the pool. So that's super basic how it works. I mean, I'm sure the comments are going to tear me apart for all these different nuances, but fundamentally, mining is just a lottery system, and you're basically just selecting numbers as quickly as you can.
Yeah,
and so then,
I think that's a fantastic explanation, because I'm not a miner, and I just understood that very well. You see?
Yep.
Boom. There you go. Like, I think that's fantastic.
Love it. Great.
And just to add to Nick's point, you know, you have one S9. What is the probability that you're going to find the block? Very low, right? So what do? You pool your resources, aka mining pool, right? Yep. To at least, you know, share, right? To distribute the
variance.
Thank you.
Technically, like at a very fundamental level, what a mining pool is, it's called a variance mitigation service. We basically, mm-hmm. Every one of your lottery tickets that you submit, or your S9 submits in this analogy, is worth exactly the same as every other lottery ticket. You just don't happen to know which one is worth, has the actual value. So they all have the same expected value, but you don't know which one has the actual value. So what you have to do is you spread that out across a bunch of people, or a bunch of tickets, I guess. And then you basically take the reward that way.
Awesome. So when we had Ethan on the show, he was talking about something called hash wars, right?
Right.
You want to talk a little bit about that? Because that sounds pretty hardcore. When Ethan explained it, we were just like, whoa, we want to hear from you, Nick.
Yeah. So was this okay. So there's a couple things here. We've used that. Is that for national security?
No. So not the Max Kaiser definition, but in terms of Ethan was telling me when you guys first started Luxor, because I remember you guys from the very beginning.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
When you guys first started Luxor, you guys were actually getting attacked by Chinese mining pools. So can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah, certainly I can. It was not on a Bitcoin pool, but it was on a pool that was, and this same attack does exist for Bitcoin. And effectively what we were doing was trying to figure out who was mining at our pool and then not submitting the block. So in the case, in that lottery example, somebody was like, oh, I have the winning ticket. I know it, but I'm not going to give it to the pool. I'm going to screw them. And so they don't ever get the reward. And so we're continuing to pay out everybody, right? So everybody's getting paid, but I'm not going to submit the reward. I'm not actually going to submit the winner that gets the mining pool reimbursed for all that work that they paid for. The way we've isolated that is through a bunch of meta analysis. There's no technical way to completely mitigate that attack. There is a soft fork that could be introduced called the dual target fork that Peter Todd and Luke Jr. worked on years ago. But I just don't think there would be I don't think we have the political capital to get that hard fork through because it would just be I just think it would be too much politicking. Now, if mining pools started to become one of the largest businesses in the world, then maybe we would see that come through because the stakes would be so much higher.
Okay, and a final question, because I know a lot of people are wondering this. Let me kind of pull up essentially a share of the different mining pools of, the Bitcoin network, right? So again, like you said, it's, by the way, congratulations on the 1.3%. I think that's a major achievement. I remember you guys when you first started, right? So the fact that you got here, amazing. But just a question, right? Since you know, since you're only 1.3%, meaning that you only find, you know, if there's 100 blocks, you only find 1.3 of those blocks.
Each day, yeah.
Right. How do you ensure that someone has the same amount of profitability mining with Luxor Pool than mining with a bigger pool?
So in the lottery example I used, I was describing a method called PPLNS, which is what Slush uses. There's a couple of other PPLNS pools where you you don't get paid until the block is actually hit. And then you aggregate all of the lottery tickets together and then pay out proportionally. So sometimes it takes you more guesses. Sometimes it takes you fewer to actually pick the winning number. And that's called your luck factor. Well, in the Luxor method, we do what's called PPS, meaning pay per share. So if there's a thousand, if there's 1,000 lottery numbers and I submit a ticket and each lottery pays $1,000, I know that each ticket is worth $1, right? So instead of me requiring us to find a block, I can just pay you the dollar, right? Because every ticket you give me has the exact same value as every other ticket. So that way your mining, your miners end up, you get paid regardless of whether the pool finds blocks. And I think in my mind, this is the most egalitarian way to mine because it incentivizes the mining pool to be more efficient. On PPLNS, there's really no incentive other than maybe you get just a hair luckier or you reduce your variance just a little bit. But in this case, it impacts the bottom line of the pool to actually go out and try to make efficiency gains, improve the pool, and ensure that you're mining at the maximum efficiency.
But that's why we pay PPLNS. Doesn't that put you at risk though?
Oh yeah, certainly. Yeah, we take on the risk rather than in a PPLNS method or a proportional method, you're amortizing that risk across all participants. In the other, you know, in our, you know, in the PPS method, which is also I should be clear that PPS is effectively industry standard now. I think all of the pools except for Slush in that list are PPS, and so you know, we're just falling in line there. But that's to say that yeah, we do take on quite a lot more risk.
Okay, awesome. Yeah. So another thing, guys, you guys know the drill. We never invite guests on if we haven't used the products themselves. I've used Luxor in the past before. Awesome UI, especially compared to the Chinese mining pools. Very, very good stuff over there. Phil, do you have any final thoughts to wrap it up?
I just learned so much more about mining than I ever knew before. And I mean, it's just fantastic. Unfortunately, I don't have much more to add than that.
Yeah,
I'm just amazed. So I really appreciate you coming on and explaining all of this. Like for real, I did not, when I was, you know, when I was thinking about mining pools, that example is fantastic, simple. And then you explaining the difference between the, you know, between like essentially the two protocols, the PPS, and I'm sorry, I don't remember the other one.
Yeah, PPLNS, pay per last hand shares. Yeah.
Like I didn't realize there was even a difference, you know. So it's I think it's cool, you know. People, you know what? It's like they didn't know that, but now they do. So I appreciate it.
I'm here to teach, man. Best awesome. I can, anyway.
like all Bitcoiners, you know, this is also a good important lesson to everybody, guys. You know, you don't need to be a mining expert. You don't need to be a content creator. You don't need to be a coder. Just find what you're good at. Give back to Bitcoin because Bitcoin has given a lot to you. But anyways, Phil, there was an open source software release today. Why don't you tell everybody about it?
Software releases. Brought to you by CypherSafe.io. Check them out. Fireproof, waterproof, tamper evident, pet proof as well. It's the best place to store your seed. Check them out down below in the show notes. All right, we've got Mercury Wallet version 0.4.48 down below. It's a Bitcoin wallet. Check it out.
Awesome. Thank you, Phil. All right, guys, that was our show. Before we go, don't forget to subscribe to us on rumble.com in case YouTube does the... Also, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Anchor. And I want to give a shout out to our awesome guest. He is the CEO of Luxor Pool, Nick H. You can go follow him on the Twitter at @_Bender. And guys, I've used Luxor before. I definitely recommend them. Use them as your mining pool. Check it out. Luxor Mining. And also, check out the Hash Rate Index. It's like a steroid version of the Clark Moody dashboard. Really, really cool stuff. But anyways, guys, if you enjoyed the show, you know what to do. Smash that like button. And of course, if you want to continue hearing the Bitcoin news from the PPLEP perspective and the catastrophic fails, definitely consider subscribing. And we'll see you tomorrow, guys, for another episode of Simply Bitcoin.
Everyone's underestimating Bitcoin's incentives. We'll be right back.